Welcome to Why Make Music, episode 37. I'm your host, DJ Warm Cookies, also known as Willa May, and tonight we're going on a journey. Close your eyes and imagine a gentle crackle of static, the soft hiss as a tape rolls in the deck. In that hiss, there's a story. In that mixtape, there's a piece of someone's soul. This episode is all about the mixtape, not just the object, but the emotion, the culture, the love and yearning threaded through every curated track. I speak to you with a warm heart and nostalgic soul, pairing my words with the mellow instrumental beds provided by Thinktim. Shout out to the maestro behind the beats guiding us on this trip. Whether you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or some old school stereo, I invite you to travel with me through time and across continents. Together, we'll flip through decades like the sides of a cassette. From the 1960s, reel-to-reel origins of the mixtape idea, all the way to the 2020s. Algorithmic playlists that define our streaming era. Along the way, we'll visit the dimly lit basements of New York, where hip-hop DJs spun magic on tape. The bustling streets of London, where pirate radio pulses through cassette recordings. The vibrant favelas of Brazil, moving to homegrown mix CDs, and the neon-lit rooms of Tokyo, where cassette culture finds new life. We'll remember the DJs who became legends through mixtapes. People like Grandmaster Flash, DJ Clue, DJ Drama, Kay Slay, DJ Screw, and the ever-mischievous MF Doom, each with their own chapter in this saga. But this isn't just a history lesson. This is a guided sonic memoir, a cultural time machine set to play. I'll be sharing some personal anecdotes, poetic reflections, and maybe even a few confessions. Mixtapes are deeply personal things. Love letters made of songs, protest pamphlets in audio form, diaries you can dance to. If you're like me, you might still have a shoebox of old tapes or CDs somewhere. Each one a time capsule of feelings. Perhaps there's that mix you made for your first crush, trying to say with lyrics what you couldn't with words, or the playlist you put together to get you through a heartbreak or a long, lonely road trip. In those curated tracks and transitions, in the way one song melts into the next, there lies intention and emotion. As the great Nick Hornby once wrote in High Fidelity, making a mixtape is like writing a letter. You pour your heart into every choice and order, hoping to strike the right chords in the listener. A beloved old cassette, labeled with a personal touch. A tangible piece of someone's musical soul. Each mixtape carries memories in its magnetic ribbon, telling stories that words alone often cannot. So, let's embark on this journey through mixtape history and culture. Feel the click of the record button and the whirl of reels as we step back to where it all began. Keep your ears open and your heart wide, because this trip is as ethereal as it is down-to-earth, as intellectual as it is nostalgic. From mono to stereo, from analog to digital, from hand-dubbed cassettes to curated streams, we'll see how the mixtape evolved and what it continues to mean for all of us music lovers. Ready? I know I am. Let's hit play on the story of the mixtape. 1960s. Reel-to-reel beginnings. Let's travel back to the early 1960s. Before the word mixtape existed, but not before the idea of it began to glimmer. In that era, reel-to-reel tape recorders were the domain of audio enthusiasts and professionals. Picture a big, spinning reel of tape on a machine the size of a suitcase. If you were lucky enough, or wealthy enough, to have one, you could spool your own recordings. Perhaps a jazz aficionado, in 1965, might thread a reel with favorite cuts from vinyl records, creating a personal compilation to play at a dinner party. Or imagine a young soldier in Vietnam recording an audio letter on reel tape to send back home. Speaking to a sweetheart, and maybe sneaking in snippets of their song. These were essentially early mixtapes, heartfelt messages in a bottle, cast in magnetic tape. A major breakthrough came in 1963, when the compact cassette was introduced by this small plastic cassette, with two spools and a brown tape running between them, was a revolution. No longer did one need clunky reels and expensive gear to make recordings. Suddenly, anyone could record songs or voice on a device that fit in your hand. Early on, the sound quality was rough, and the music industry didn't quite know what to make of it. But a spark was lit. By the late 60s, music lovers were beginning to use cassettes to copy their vinyl records or capture radio broadcasts. The seeds of mixtape culture were sown as people realized they could curate their own collections of songs. In bedrooms and garages, you might find teenagers fiddling with portable cassette recorders, making early attempts at compilation tapes, even if they didn't call them that yet. They'd wait by the radio on a Sunday night, finger hovering over the red record button, ready to catch that new Beatles or Motown hit and save it to a personal tape. The technology was still young. Songs cut off unexpectedly. The tape hiss was loud, and editing meant physically cutting tape with a razor and splicing it. But none of that stopped the rise of a new idea, that ordinary people could control what they listened to, in what order, and share that with others. Music has always been about sharing. Think of playing records for friends, or dedicating a song on the radio to someone you love. The mixtape 2B was the next step in that evolution. By the end of the 1960s, the world was changing. Protests, love-ins, rock festivals. Amid all that change, the humble cassette tape quietly entered the scene. It would take the 1970s for it to truly explode. But already, a few visionary souls were using tapes to capture the sounds of their lives. The reels were turning, literally and figuratively. The mixtape era was dawning, one spool at a time, with each click and whir of those early tape machines bringing us closer to a new way of experiencing music. 1970s. Rise of the cassette and mixtape culture. If the 1960s planted the seed, the 1970s was when that seed sprouted. This was the decade the cassette tape truly came into its own as a medium for the masses. Throughout the 70s, audio technology improved. Cassette decks got better. Tapes sounded clearer, and the idea of recording your own music at home went from a novelty to a commonplace. It wasn't instantaneous. Early in the decade, VINYL records still reigned supreme. But year by year, the little cassette was chipping away at the old order. One of the monumental moments was the release of the Sony Walkman in 1979. Suddenly, music became truly mobile. Imagine the freedom. You could create a mixtape at home and then walk out the door with your music, literally in your pocket. Headphones on, the world now moving to the beat of your personal soundtrack. Joggers, commuters, and teenagers on school buses all embraced this new freedom. A mixtape could travel with you, scoring the moments of your life like a personal movie soundtrack. The original Sony Walkman, 1979. A revolution in listening. With a Walkman clipped to your belt and a favorite mixtape snapped inside, music became a constant companion, turning sidewalks into scenic routes and daily life into a series of musical montages. As cassettes spread, so did mixtape culture in many forms. In living rooms across America and beyond, people sat by their stereos, carefully timing the recording of songs off the radio. The patience this required. You'd wait through commercials and DJ chatter with a ready finger, hoping to catch that one song without too much interruption. You'd scribble the tracklist on the cassette's J-card insert with a ballpoint pen. Maybe add some doodles or hearts, making it your creation. By late 1970s, giving someone a cassette of assorted tunes had become a heartfelt gesture. A new kind of love letter or friendship offering sealed with plastic tabs and magnetic tape. Meanwhile, an underground movement was brewing in music. In New York City, in the Bronx, to be precise. The earliest hip-hop DJs were using turntables to craft something revolutionary. DJs like Kool Herc, Grandmaster Flash, and Afrika Bambaataa threw block parties where they looped the breakbeats of funk and soul records, and MCs rapped improvised lines to keep the crowd hyped. These live jams were ephemeral, unless someone hit record. And indeed, people did. Originally, mixtapes were live recordings of performances by DJs and MCs, mixes of beats with rappers freestyling over them, copied and circulated by fans. In the late 70s, long before any rapper got a major record deal, the sounds of these park parties and rec room battles spread on cassette tapes, passed hand to hand, burrow to burrow. They were unpolished and raw, the bass often distorted, crowd noise in the background, but they were magic. Those tapes captured the birth of hip-hop, a genre and culture that itself was a mix of influences and voices. And it wasn't just New York. Across the ocean in places like Jamaica, sound system crews were recording their reggae dancehall sessions onto cassettes, creating informal distributions of new music and live remixes. In the UK, the DIY spirit was thriving too. The late 70s punk and post-punk scene found cassettes to be a perfect guerrilla medium. Bands and bedroom artists started their own cassette labels, releasing limited-run tapes of music outside the mainstream system. This phenomenon, later dubbed cassette culture, empowered anyone to be an artist or a curator. You didn't need a pressing plant or a distribution deal, just a dual cassette deck and some imagination. Home tapers and indie labels in the US, UK, and beyond swapped tapes by mail, forming global networks of underground music trading. By the end of the 1970s, cassettes had infiltrated everyday life. The major record companies were selling albums on cassette alongside vinyl. Cars often had cassette players, meaning the mixtape had a place in every road trip and every summer cruising night. The mixtape concept still felt new, but its potential was clear. The industry started to feel a bit uneasy about all this homemade copying, hints of a storm that would come in the 80s. But for now, in the 70s, the mixtape was largely the people's domain. It was about sharing music you loved, capturing moments, and giving a soundtrack to your experiences. With each tape that changed hands, whether a dub of a DJ's party set, or a collection of romantic songs for a sweetheart, the mixtape culture grew roots deeper into society. The reels-to-reels had given way to the cassette, and the cassette was giving everyone a voice, a song, and a chance to be heard. 1980s. The golden era boomboxes, love songs, and street tapes. Enter the 1980s, and behold the glory days of the mixtape. If you picture this era, you might see a kid on a street corner with a giant boombox on their shoulder, blasting beats, vintage boomboxes from the 1980s on display. These portable cassette sound systems helped carry mixtape culture into the streets, turning sidewalks, parks, and subway stations into impromptu music halls. With dual cassette decks and battery power, boomboxes allowed anyone to copy tapes or blast their personal mixes for all to hear, embodying the do-it-yourself spirit of the era. Those boomboxes, big portable stereos with twin cassette decks, were more than just status symbols. They were tools of mixtape culture. With a boombox, you could record directly from the radio or dub copies of a friend's tape. You could carry your music to the park, the playground, the beach, and suddenly everyone's invited to your sonic world. The mixtape had both a private side shared between friends, exchanged like secret notes, and a public side, the soundtrack of block parties and breakdance battles. This was the decade when making a mixtape became a common pastime, almost a rite of passage. High school halls and college dorms across the world were full of whispered conversations like, "I made you a tape." Curating the perfect mix of songs for someone, be it your crush, your best friend, or your own late night drives, was an art form. You had to balance the mood, tempo, and message. Many of us remember the painstaking process. Planning out side A and side B, worrying about fitting the last song before the tape clicks off. Maybe even crafting little cover art or lining the cassette case with a photo. A good mixtape in the 80s was a treasure. It was Instagram and a love letter and a diary entry all in one, long before any of those existed. Of course, as mixtapes flourished, the music industry took notice, and it panicked. They saw millions of us recording songs off the radio or copying albums for friends and thought, this is going to ruin us. In 1981, the British phonographic industry launched a now infamous campaign with the slogan, "Home taping is killing music." They stamped advertisements with a menacing logo, a cassette with crossbones, a literal Jolly Roger pirate flag made of tape. The message was clear and a bit overdramatic. Every time you hit record, you were apparently hammering a nail in music's coffin. But honestly, that propaganda only cemented the mixtape's rebel mystique. Teenagers proudly wore t-shirts with a Skolankasette logo as a badge of honor. If home taping was killing music, then a lot of us felt fine being the villains. Because what we were really doing was keeping music alive in our hearts and sharing it in our communities. On the streets, especially in urban America, the hip-hop mixtape scene was evolving. By the mid-80s, hip-hop had moved from the parks to the studios. Run DMC and LL Cool J were on MTV, but an entire parallel economy of mixtapes thrived outside the mainstream. DJs like Brocky B, Kid Capri, and Lovebug Starsky would record live mix sessions or curate the hottest new tracks onto tapes and sell them on street corners, in record shops, and out of car trunks in New York. These tapes often featured exclusive remixes, freestyles, and shoutouts you couldn't hear anywhere else. In Harlem, the rooftop parties at Club 12, or the feverish nights at the Roxy, were captured on Maxell and TDK tapes, spreading the vibe far beyond the club. Mixtapes also played a crucial role in the rise of new genres. In the UK, during the 80s, pirate radio DJs, broadcasting soul, reggae, and early electronic music, inadvertently spawned a mixtape culture of their own. Listeners would tape those crackly illegal radio shows to enjoy later, effectively creating archives of scenes that had little to. Meanwhile, official compilations on cassette were making waves too. In 1986, the British music magazine NME released the C86 tape, a curated selection of indie pop bands that became legendary, often cited as the cassette that launched a whole indie genre. It proved that a mixtape, even one put together by a magazine, could shift musical movements, introducing listeners to a new sound in one neat package. And let's not forget how mixtapes touched pop culture in this era. Directors like Spike Lee curated film soundtracks that felt like personal mixtapes. For instance, his 1989 film Do the Right Thing practically revolves around a boombox blasting Public Enemy's Fight the Power, a song that became an anthem of its time and imbued the film with the energy of a meticulously chosen mixtape track. Filmmakers realized that selecting the right songs in the right sequence could define a story. Just as we realized our own lives could feel like movies if we scored them with the right mixtape. By the late 1980s, the term mixtape was common vernacular, and the phenomenon was everywhere. From the soft glow of a bedroom where someone is quietly assembling a romantic mix for their sweetheart, to the noisy street corner where the latest street tape is being hawked with exclusive rap battles. The mixtape was a defining element of the decade. It was the golden era in which this humble format became something epic, a catalyst for creativity, community, and even controversy. Music was no longer just something you bought and consumed. It was something you crafted and gave, a personal gift or a statement. And as we turned the cassette over to side B and rolled into the 1990s, that spirit of the mixtape would only grow stronger. 1990s, mixtapes go mainstream. hip-hop's renaissance and personal tales. The 1990s arrived, and with them a tidal wave of change in music and technology. But the mixtape rode that wave and grew even more influential. This was a decade where the concept of a mixtape truly went mainstream. Cassettes were everywhere, but now they had a new companion, the compact disc. Early in the 90s, CDs were fancy tech for audiophiles. By the end of the 90s, they were the dominant format. Yet, even as people started to switch to CDs for albums, the culture of recording and swapping mixes remained cassette-centric for most of the decade. There was something about the ease of the tape, recording in real time, the physicality of it, that continued to captivate. In the world of hip-hop, the mixtape became almost as important as official albums. Some might even say more important. In New York, a DJ by the name of DJ Clue rose to prominence by dropping tape after tape filled with exclusive tracks and freestyles from the hottest rappers. If you wanted to hear the latest Jay-Z verse or a new Nas freestyle in 1997, you didn't tune in to MTV or buy a CD. You hunted down the latest DJ Clue mixtape from a... Clue became famous for his signature echoes and sound effects New Clue. Clue, and he proved that a DJ could be a star in his own right by curating the street's favorite playlist. His mixtapes were so influential that eventually he landed a record deal to make what were essentially mixtape albums on a major label. Down in Houston, Texas, an entirely different mixtape revolution was happening courtesy of the late great DJ Screw. In the mid-90s, DJ Screw started slowing down records, way down, to create a hypnotic syrupy sound that matched the sweltering heat of Houston nights. He'd take a popular song, slow it to a crawl, and chop it up with repetition and scratches, turning hip-hop into a woozy, mellow ride. These were the famed Screw tapes. Fans would line up outside his house late at night, because Screw would literally sell his mixtapes straight out of his home studio and later his shop. As soon as he finished mixing them, it's said that at his peak, DJ Screw was selling thousands of tapes a week. Folks just couldn't get enough of that slowdown vibe. He named his tapes with titles like June 27th, A Legendary Session, or based on the color of the cassette, entire subgenres and a rap scene, the Screwed Up Click and beyond, grew from those tapes. When you drove through Houston's South Side in the 90s, you might hear that distinctive dragged beat rumbling from car speakers, the unmistakable mark of a screw tape in the deck. Back on the East Coast, another figure, DJ K Slay, was emerging, known as the Drama King. In the late 90s and early 2000s, K Slay's mixtapes became the battleground for hip-hop beefs and raw street anthems. If two rappers were feuding, chances are their diss tracks hit a K Slay tape first. He had a way of stirring the pot, and listeners loved it. His Street Sweepers series would carry some of the most talked about exclusives of the era. The mixtape was the news ticker of hip-hop. It's how you kept up with who was beefing with whom, who had a hot new verse, and which up-and-comer was making noise. Mixtapes in the 90s also began to shape the way artists made their albums. Rappers like 50 Cent famously used mixtapes to build huge buzz before ever releasing a studio album. In the early 2000s, 50's tactic of rapping over others' beats on mixtapes got him noticed by Eminem and Dr. Dre, a strategy now legendary in music circles. But even before that, many artists treated their official releases with a mixtape mindset. More samples, interludes, skits, and a flow that felt like a continuous DJ set. The influence of the mixtape's Anything Goes, creativity seeped into production techniques. Here we should give a nod to MF Doom, the masked underground icon. Doom wasn't a mixtape DJ. He was a rapper, producer. But when he returned to the scene in 1999 with Operation Doomsday, he brought a mixtape aesthetic into his albums. He blended dialogue snippets from old Fantastic Four cartoons, soul music samples, and quirky comedic skits throughout his tracks. Listening to a Doom record felt like tuning into a pirate radio show from another dimension. It had the vibe of a homemade tape compiled by a brilliant, eccentric friend who wanted to school you on esoteric beats and rhymes. His later instrumental series, Special Herbs, were essentially beat mixtapes released as albums. Doom showed that the boundary between mixtape and album could be delightfully blurry. What mattered was the vibe, the journey. Amid all this, the personal mixtape remained a cherished ritual for everyday people. Let's get personal for a moment. I remember one from my own life, the summer of 1995. I was away from home for an internship, feeling lonely in a new city. A dear friend mailed me a cassette labeled Warm Cookies Mix. Summer 95, yes, using my DJ name as a pun. I popped it into my Walkman, and suddenly, through those headphones, it was like my friend was right there with me, guiding me through a musical postcard of home. There was side A, upbeat tracks to boost my confidence as I walked through downtown, and side B, late-night chill songs for when the homesickness hit. Between some songs, she had even recorded little voice messages, telling me funny stories or encouragement. Her voice nestled between the tracks. I laughed, I cried, I wore that tape out. To this day, when I hear certain songs from it, a bit of sod, a dash of A Tribe Called Quest, that one Lenny Kravitz track, I'm instantly transported back to 1995, to that sweltering little apartment and the feeling of not being alone. That was the power of a mixtape in the 90s. It was a lifeline. Popular culture acknowledged this magic, too. In the 2000 film High Fidelity, based on Nick Hornby's 1995 novel, John Cusack's character gives an entire monologue about the art of making a perfect mixtape, right down to agonizing over the first song and the flow thereafter. By that point, audiences nodded in recognition. Of course, making a tape was a subtle art. We all knew it. We lived it. Whether it was a road trip mix on a long drive with friends, a workout mix on your clunky portable CD player, yes. By the late 90s, some of us were burning mix CDs as the new iteration of the mixtape, or a romantic tape for the one who got away. The mixtape was woven in. At the tail end of the 90s, big changes were afoot. The internet and digital music knocked on the door. In 1999, a program called Napster emerged, and suddenly the idea of sharing music took on a whole new, massive scale. People were now swapping MP3 files online across the globe, crafting digital folders of songs that were essentially mixtapes without the physical tape. It was exhilarating, and a bit scary for the music biz. The mixtape was about to mutate again, adapting to the digital age. But as the 90s closed, one thing was clear. The mixtape, whether on cassette, CD, or in spirit, was an unstoppable force. At the very heart of how we experienced music and expressed ourselves through it, 2000s. Digital revolution. From CD burns to datpip. The 2000s dawned with a new millennium and a new mixtape paradigm. The word mixtape still evoked images of cassettes for many of us, but day by day, that analog era was giving way to digital. The compact disc had taken over retail music sales by the early 2000s, and now home computers were common, which meant CD burners were in the hands of the masses. Suddenly, you didn't need to dub a tape in real time. You could drag and drop a playlist on your computer and burn a mix CD in a fraction of the time if you were tech-savvy enough to avoid making a shiny coaster by mistake. For those of us who grew up with tapes, there was a bit of sadness in leaving behind the beloved cassette. But we quickly embraced the crisp sound and convenience of CDs. A mix CD had its own advantages. No more worrying about tape, hiss, or the mechanical clunk of auto-reverse, and you could skip tracks with a button. Throughout the 2000s, Gifting someone a burned CD of your favorite songs became as normal as giving a mixtape in the decade prior. It was the same love, on a new format. Meanwhile, the internet was reshaping how we discover and share music. After Napster's wild ride at the turn of the century, the platform erupted in 1999 and was effectively shut down by 2001, leaving a trail of both enlightened and enraged people in its wake. The floodgates of digital music were opened. By the mid-2000s, the idea of an online mixtape became reality. Websites and forums popped up where users would share playlists and collections of MP3s south. And then came the rise of dedicated mixtape platforms, most notably Datpiff, in 2005. Datpiff became the go-to hub for hip-hop mixtapes online, a place where you could download the latest Lil Wayne or Gucci Mane tape for free and legally, well, semi-legally. The site operated in a gray area with the blessing of artists hungry for exposure. No longer did you need to be in New York or LA to snag the hot new mixtape from a street vendor. A kid in rural Kansas or a fan in Paris could get it with a few clicks. The shift to digital had huge implications. It meant a mixtape could go viral, reaching millions without a single physical copy being made. Artists took note. Lil Wayne, who by the mid-2000s was proclaiming himself the mixtape Wheezy, flooded the internet with free music between his official albums. Those mixtapes, like the Dedication series with DJ Drama, or DA Drought series, were lauded by fans and kept Wayne's legend growing. By the time his next album dropped, fans were ravenous. The industry started to see the mixtape not as a threat, but as a promotional weapon, albeit one they still couldn't fully control. And speaking of DJ Drama, the 2000s were his time to shine, and also the time he got burned. DJ Drama and his affiliates crew were dropping the acclaimed Gangsta Grillz mixtapes, collaborating with everyone from T.I. to Jeezy, effectively setting the southern rap landscape on fire. But in 2007, in a scene straight out of a movie, Drama's studio in Atlanta was raided by law enforcement in conjunction with the RIAA. They seized over 80,000 mixtapes, CDs and arrested Drama and his partner Don Cannon on racketeering charges. Imagine, the mixtape game had gotten so influential that the feds treated DJs like mob kingpins. The incident sent shockwaves through the music community. For a moment, everyone thought the mixtape hustle might go dark. Who wanted a potential FBI raid? But the opposite happened. The clampdown pushed the mixtape further into the digital realm. With physical tapes and CDs under threat, the culture migrated even more to websites and online drops, making sites like Datpiff absolutely essential to keep the pipeline flowing. In a way, the raid signaled the end of an era. The mixtape was no longer a purely underground, physical thing. It had become a recognized, if sometimes notorious, part of the music ecosystem, one that would survive by evolving. During this time, something else changed. How we ourselves curated music day to day. In 2001, Apple introduced the iPod and the iTunes software, and with it the concept of the easy digital playlist. Remember making those early iTunes playlists, carefully picking songs and then maybe burning them to a CD for a friend? It was the same impulse as the mixtape, just faster and cleaner. You could make a playlist for winter 2004 moods, or for your upcoming study session, and have it on your sleek little iPod instead of on a bulky cassette. The language even shifted. Increasingly, people said playlist as much as mixtape. But emotionally and culturally, it was one continuum. In fact, I'd argue playlist is just what we started calling a mixtape when we removed the physical tape. The heart behind it stayed the same. The 2000s also saw new platforms for sharing personal mixes legally. There were niche websites like 8Tracks, launched in 2008, where users could craft streaming playlists with a mixtape vibe and share them with the world. Even earlier, for a brief moment, a site called Mixtape allowed people to upload a handful of MP3 self to create a virtual mixtape and share the URL that is protuped until the RIAA shut that down with a quickness. The desire to share music in curated batches was as strong as ever, and technology was racing to catch up, stumbling over legal hurdles along the way. Regionally, the mixtape ethos continued to thrive in unique ways too. In Brazil, for example, the 2000s brought the explosion of Tecnobrojo, a genre from that flipped the music business on its head. Producers and DJs in that scene would press their own CDs and give them away, or sell them for pennies in street. Markets embracing piracy as promotion and bypassing record labels entirely. A Tecnobrojo DJ might hand you a homemade mix of their latest tunes at a party. Or you could buy one from a vendor for about the price of a soda. Those CDs were the lifeblood of a whole local industry. Proof that mixtape culture could form the foundation of an economy. Similarly, in the favelas of Rio, baile funk DJs sold mix CDs of the latest funk karaoke tracks, ensuring the music spread, even without radio play. Across the world, the tools had changed. CDs instead of cassettes, MP3 South instead of CDs. But the principle was unchanged. Get the music directly to the people, by any means necessary. By the end of the 2000s, we were all living in what felt like mixtape overload. Our iPods held thousands of songs, and new mixes or playlists were a click away. Social media was budding, and you might find MySpace pages or blogs curated by friends with embedded playlists. Personal internet radio stations of a sort. The mixtape had become less a physical object and more a cultural concept, a way of thinking about music as a personalized experience. And through all this, the soul of the mixtape endured. I like to imagine that even as format shifted, somewhere a teenager in 2005 was still hitting record on a cassette deck because it was the only tool they had, and pouring their heart into a tape for someone special. At the same time, another kid was making a mixed 2005 CD with the exact same care. Different mediums, same love. The decade closed with the mixtape transformed yet again, setting the stage for an era where algorithms and streaming would both assist and compete with the human touch of a mixtape maker. But that's the next chapter in our journey. The 2010s, where the playlist truly goes to the cloud. 2010s, playlists and the cloud, mixtape spirit in a streaming world. By the 2010s, the musical landscape had largely moved into the cloud, quite literally. Streaming became the dominant mode of listening. You no longer needed to own music to make a mix. You just needed a subscription or an internet connection. On one hand, it felt like mixtape heaven. Any song you think of, you can pull into a playlist instantly. On the other hand, the human touch of the classic mixtape now had a new rival: algorithms. Spotify led the way with curated and algorithmically generated playlists that attracted huge followings. One flagship playlist, Rap Caviar, amassed millions of listeners and essentially became the new mixtape to break hip-hop artists just curated by an editor at Spotify, rather than a street DJ. It was even dubbed the most influential playlist in music by publications. Meanwhile, Spotify's mysterious algorithms learned our tastes and began serving up personalized mixes. Discover Weekly, for example, which launched in 2015, would deliver a fresh 2-hour playlist of songs every Monday tailored to your listening habits. It felt a bit like a friend or a DJ making a mix just for you, except that friend was a complex piece of code crunching data about your behavior. These algorithmic mixes were uncannily good at times, eerily hitting the mood you're in or introducing you to an artist you end up loving. It was impressive, but also a little unsettling. It raised questions about autonomy. Were we choosing the music, or was the machine choosing for us? Nevertheless, the mixtape spirit persisted in new forms. SoundCloud became a hotbed for emerging artists. Many of the so-called SoundCloud rappers, around 2015-2017, like Lil Uzi Vert, Xpentation, and Chance the Rapper, who put out loose tracks and free projects in the mixtape tradition, sometimes not even bothering with the old label system at all. Chance famously released his Coloring Book project in 2016 as a streaming-only mixtape and still snagged Grammy Awards for it, challenging the industry's definitions. Platforms like Bandcamp offered another avenue. Artists could share music directly with fans, free or paid, effectively letting an artist function as their own mixtape, DJ, and distributor. The playlist became the 2010s term du jour. Everyone was making playlists. You'd create a Spotify playlist for your road trip and shoot the link to your friends. Or you'd follow public playlists curated by influencers, brands, or magazines. Some playlists became almost collaborative cultural creations. Think of those massive shared playlists people contribute to on forums for a certain vibe or event. The ease of sharing a link meant a mixtape no longer had to be a single backtest. It could morph and update, all be experienced simultaneously by thousands of followers. This was mixtape culture scaled up and atomized by the internet. Popular media continued to stoke nostalgia for the old-school mixtape, even as we embraced the new. Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy films, starting in 2014, centered around a literal mixtape. Awesome Mix, Vol. 1, a cassette filled with 1970s hits that a mother leaves her son. The movie's soundtrack not only charmed audiences, it rocketed to number one on the Billboard chart, proving that a great mix of songs, even older songs, can feel as fresh and exciting as any new album. Suddenly, a new generation was watching Star-Lord reverently pop a cassette into his Walkman, and perhaps wondering, maybe I should make one of those. Sales of blank cassettes and vintage Walkmans did see a little bump around then. Even Stranger Things and other retro-minded shows further romanticized the analog mixtape aesthetic. And yes, cassettes unbelievably made a modest comeback. By the late 2010s, beyond the niche circles of noise and metal bands that never abandoned them, even some pop and indie artists were releasing limited cassette editions for collectors. There was a tactile novelty in the tape that no playlist could replicate, and young fans raised on invisible MP3 files found charm in the clunky plastic relics. In Japan, this cassette revival was especially noteworthy, with Gen Z buyers scooping up tapes and labels producing new cassette players to meet demand. It seemed the further music drifted into intangible streams, the more some people longed to hold a piece of it in their hands, to feel that analog warmth and personal ownership a mixtape provides. In the mainstream industry, mixtapes and albums blurred together during the 2010s. Established artists started dropping surprise mixtapes on streaming services that were virtually indistinguishable from albums. Aside from the label of being a mixtape, often meaning it was released free or without the usual album rollout. As one musicologist noted, what was once a DIY cassette with a scribbled J card is now taken very seriously by the industry. Some mixtapes are produced as slickly as albums and released officially, blurring the line between the two. The role of the old-school DJ in curating these tapes has sometimes been replaced by the artists themselves or their producers. Where in the 90s we shouted out DJ drama or Clue hosting a tape, in the 2010s we looked at, say, Metro Boomin or Zeta Van producing a whole mixtape for Future or Gucci Mane. The producer became the star curator in many cases. Crucially, the democratization that mixtapes always symbolized hit full stride. Social media and platforms like TikTok in the late 2010s turned everyone into a potential tastemaker. A teenager making a fidgety song TikTok video with a catchy song could inadvertently create a hit, essentially performing the mixtape's role of elevating a song to thousands of new listeners, but at lightning speed. One viral meme or dance challenge could do what hustling a trunk full of tapes did back in the day, only exponentially faster. In a way, TikTok trends became the new street singles. And user-curated viral playlists on streaming services often propelled these songs onto the charts. By the end of the 2010s, the mixtape as a term, as a practice, as a philosophy, had diffused into nearly every aspect of music culture. We might not always call a Spotify playlist a mixtape, but when you painstakingly create a sequence of songs and share it, you are continuing the mixtape legacy. And importantly, the reasons remain the same. To express feelings, to tell a story, to share discoveries, or to simply craft the perfect vibe. Now, standing here at the tail of that decade and the beginning of the 2020s, we find ourselves asking, where does the mixtape go from here? Do we lose something when algorithms pick songs for us? What have we gained with unlimited access? And what do we crave from the old limitations? These questions lead us into a final reflection on what mixtapes have taught us about being listeners and humans, and where the art of musical curation might be headed next. The mixtape's legacy, what it teaches us about curation and self. As our journey through time comes to a close, let's step back and reflect on the bigger picture. We've seen the mixtape evolve from magnetized ribbons to streaming bits, from something you held in your hand to something that lives in the cloud. But through all those changes, the essence of the mixtape remains surprisingly constant. It is about connection between songs, between people, and within ourselves. At its core, a mixtape has always been a testament to the human desire to curate meaning. In a world overwhelmed by sound and information, making a mixtape is an act of saying, these few songs, in this order, matter right now. It's a tiny declaration of order and beauty. In choosing songs and sequencing them, we reveal pieces of ourselves. Think about the times you've made a mix. You agonize over song choices, because you are effectively writing a letter in a language everyone understands, but few truly speak fluently. The language of music. If you give someone a mixtape or a playlist, you're telling them, this is how I feel. This is how I see the world. I want you to experience it with me. There's a vulnerability in that, an honesty that can be hard to convey with just words. Listener autonomy has been a recurring theme. The mixtape emerged as a symbol of listeners taking control. No longer were we at the mercy of radio, DJs, or record labels to decide what we could hear and in what sequence. We became the DJs of our own lives. Each mixtape is an exercise in freedom. You craft a narrative or a mood out of the infinite possibilities of sound. This autonomy only grew as technology advanced. Today, any of us can wake up and, within minutes, assemble a playlist that spans decades, genres, and continents. That's powerful. But with that power comes the subtle influence of the new gatekeepers, algorithms and platforms. When a recommendation engine serves you up the perfect song, is that enhancing your autonomy or gently eroding it? It's a bit of both. The future of curation likely lies in a balance. Algorithms might handle the heavy lifting of suggestion, but the human will always have to step in to imbue a sequence with soul and personal intention. Because a great mixtape or playlist is more than the sum of its parts, it's the fingerprint of the person who made it. What do mixtapes teach us about the self? For one, they teach us that we are not static. Just as a mixtape has a side A and side B, each highlighting different moods, we too contain multitudes. Dig out an old mixtape or playlist you made years ago, and you'll find a time capsule of your psyche. Ah, so this is what 16-year-old me stayed up at night thinking about. You'll say when that painfully earnest love song or that angsty rock anthem kicks in. Mixtapes are diaries encoded in melody and rhythm. They show how our tastes change, and with them, our identities. Yet they also show the through lines. Perhaps the same Bob Marley track appears on mixes 10 years apart, reminding you that some part of you, the part that finds peace in that song, has been constant. Mixtapes also teach empathy and listening. When you craft a mix for someone else, you step into their shoes, trying to hear the songs as they might, hoping to evoke a certain feeling in them. You learn to balance your voice with the listener's ear, a delicate dance of communication. It's a lesson in vulnerability too. You might pour your unrequited love into a mixtape and hand it over, heartbeat trembling, not knowing if the message will be understood or appreciated. Hitting play on that gifted mixtape is essentially hearing someone say, "Here's a bit of my soul." There's a profound emotional intelligence in that exchange. As we peer into the future, I am optimistic that the art of the mixtape, the art of thoughtful curation, will not die. If anything, it may be more needed than ever. We live in an era of limitless options, where any song is at our fingertips, but paradoxically, it can be harder to find the meaning in all that abundance. Human curators, whether it's you making a playlist for two friends, or a DJ broadcasting to 2 million, provide a narrative, a pathway through the musical wilderness. This skill will remain uniquely human as long as music is more than data, as long as it carries memory, emotion, and context that only we truly feel. We might see new forms. Maybe future mixtapes are interactive, or AI helps assemble them based on our brainwaves. Who knows? But one thing I suspect, people will always crave that feeling of receiving a mixtape. That feeling of knowing someone took the time to think about you and say, "I heard this song and thought of you," or "these tracks helped me when I was down." Maybe they'll help you too. Whether it arrives as a link in your messages, or on a retro cassette with a handwritten note, that gesture cuts through the noise. In making and sharing mixtapes, we continue a tradition of storytelling as old as humanity. Just using borrowed voices and melodies to tell our tale. Each of us is, in a way, a living mixtape, a collection of influences and experiences, remixed continuously and shared with those around us. And just like a good mixtape, we hope our individual song selection, the choices we make, the values we carry, resonates with someone out there and perhaps brings joy, understanding, or solace. So, here we are, at the end of this long sonic adventure. From reel-to-reel whispers in the 60s to AI-curated streams in the 20s, what a ride it's been. If you've made it this far on what I hope has been an enjoyable playlist of thoughts, I want to thank you. Thank you for tuning in to my nostalgia, to these cultural echoes, and to the heartbeat that underlies it all, the love of music. Before I sign off, a few shout-outs. Because mixtape culture is also shout-out culture. After all, big thanks to Think Tim, the wizard behind the scenes, for producing the warm, soulful instrumentals that have been dancing beneath my voice this whole time. Seriously, if you enjoyed the vibes, that's Think Tim bringing the cookies and the warm milk, and a nod to the platforms that carry this show. Whether you're catching this on Spotify, Apple, or another stream, it's kind of beautiful that you can hear me talk about mixtapes on the very services that appended the mixtape game. A little poetic, I'd say. Lastly, to our community and supporters, much love. If you enjoyed this journey and want to keep the mixtape spirit alive, consider checking out our show merchandise. Yes, we've got some fresh Why Make Music gear curated by Think Tim and team. So you can wear your musical heart on your sleeve, quite literally. Alright, my friends. I'm DJ Warm Cookies, aka Willem A. And it has been a pleasure and an honor to be your guide in this adventure we called the mixtape. Keep making music. Keep sharing songs. Keep that flame of curiosity and love burning. In a world that often feels shuffled and algorithmically sorted, don't forget that you have the power to create meaning one song at a time. Stay soulful, stay creative, and until next time, happy mixing.
The power. That was DJ Warm Cookies, a.k.a. Willa May in the hizzy. Welcome, people. Let me tell you something. I am alive. I am well. I am real to the touch. I can feel the future. And I decided to come unscripted, off the cuff, off the dome, just to say, I'm home. Now, lately, the workload has been kind of heavy, so I had to delegate some work out to get some things done, and this mixtape is one of the finest episodes we put out. Matter of fact, I say the last 5 or 6 have been very informative. Transformative. Enhancing your form. I am independent producer Think Tim, and I'm coming at you to let you know that I have seen the future, and the future is bright. I have been crushing, I have been expanding my knowledge, and I have been thinking about what we're gonna do next. We are approaching the 1 year mark that I have been sharing my ideas and my thoughts with the audience, with the people that matter. Do you know that you matter to me? I want to make sure that everything you get is quality. Everything you get will live up to your standards. I have been learning social media. I have been learning software. I have taken my time. I have stitched together something that's going to blow your mind. I'm letting you know, coming up will be a phenomenal year number 2. Right now, I am in the planning stage. I'm a little past pre-production. I guess you could say I am in production. If I was a Marvel film, I would be filming, ready to go into the ADR booth and do some overdubs. If I was a Star Wars movie, I might be at that point where people are so antsy. We need it. The leaks are leaking. I know you can hear me. I know that you have missed me. The other me's cool. But me personally, I like the other guy. I'm alright, but THINKTIMM 2.0, that's the guy. He's very informative. You know, he speaks so eloquently to a point that he actually helped me speak better. Do you understand? That's what technology is. That's what the future holds. I am coming at you live. WDMN, damnation. Think Tim on all your social media platforms. Don't be enthusiastic about the past. I want you to think about about the future. The future. So what do I hold in my bag of tricks? Let me tell you. Just the other day, I was sharing the ideas, you know, with the think tank. Me and Microphone Mover 101, we were chopping it up and we were talking about, oh, the journey. They tell you all the time, it's not where you go, it's how you get there. And Lord knows, I have arrived. We have arrived, we have left our mark, we have done our due. To a point that I promise you, there will be some more free time. What is free time, Think Tim? Tell me, what do you do in your free time? I do clerical work in my free time. I file publishing papers. I look up copyright law. I read, I expand. As an old man, I gotta have a hobby for my hobby. And my hobby for my hobby is keeping myself educated on all things that will push us forward in year number two. We are currently on episode 37 of Why Make Music ... Let your imagination run wild, people. Let your imagination run wild, for the future is now. I am finally one of those creators that are living in the future, meaning that I know what you will know soon. Let's fast forward. How far in the future can you go, Tim? How far can you go? If I lied and told you I can go way far, you say, give me a number, my man. Give me a number. Tell me something. I'll say, I'll go to 2094. 2094? What are you talking about? Do you have a DeLorean? Do you have a hot tub? Are you playing with your Morbius strip? Are you wielder of one of those rocks that can take you through time as long as you don't mess it up and leave your shield behind? No. I am a crafter. I am a creator. As a creator, you must live a little bit ahead of everyone else. Just a little bit. Just so you know what will be coming. You have to know when the end is near. You have to know when I say thank you, my dear. You have to know the ideas I have. You know, we have our production meeting early in the week. Willa Mae and I, we sit back, we chop it up, and I say, let's think about what we're going to do this week. What are we going to share with the people? The people, the people, the people. And she says, we've been killing it. You don't understand. She's hip. She's fly. She's part of my mind. You understand? She got it. She keeps it. And she keeps me on point. So what I'm telling you is that tune in to WDMN Damnation. Why Make Music, hosted by Willa Mae, powered by Think Tim. Hit us up on the social media sites. You know the one, Instagram at Think Tim. at DJ Warm Cookies at Why Make Music at WDMN Nation. That is WDAM Nation. Damn Nation. WDMNATION. They're all intertwined. For those who do Facebook, hit me up on Think Tim on Facebook. If you do Blue Sky, I am Think Tim on all of your streaming platforms. My music is there, and soon there will be voices. There will be singing. There will be lyrics. There will be stories. There will be layered things that will blow your mind. Can I say that I am taken back by technology? The fact that I can share my thoughts, my ideas, and everything that I want to do with people who are just as curious as me and you. I am humbled. I am thankful. I am so, so thankful, because all I ever wanted to do was share. Sometimes I am too focused on the gold, and sometimes I see beyond the gold. Sometimes I have to hear that little sound that sounds like the show's going off. It gets me in a mellow mood. It's like a lullaby. It's like a baby's song. It's like a peaceful hum. It means that the time has come for me to move on and get back down to business. It's another Friday in the box, people. What you gonna do? June is around the corner. After June, it's July, and then it's August. August is the 1 year mark, the 1 year mark that we have been out. Count the episodes, count it down. We are getting to season number 2. Oh, why make music dot dot dot? It's gonna be flyer. It's gonna be more technologically advanced. If I could bring you a hologram of a podcast, believe you me, I would. But I'm going to serve up the greatest serving of technological display that a human has put forth and has been proud to put his name on it. 'Cause we are Think Tim. We are the brand. We are the name. We are the ideas. We are the future. Think Tim. THINKTIMM and DJ Warm Cookies Willamay. All day. Peace and be wild.